Welcome to Morning Report Top Stories, a selection of news from Radio New Zealand National's Morning News Programme.
It's game on, according to Nationals leader Christopher Luxon. With the party gaining ground in the first political poll of the year, the One News Kantar poll has National back in the 30s at 32%. That is a 4 percentage point rise from November's poll. Labour dropped 1 percentage point to 40%. On these numbers, Labour would still comfortably be able to form a government with help from the Greens, who were unchanged on 9%. Jacinda Ardern took a 4 percentage point hit as preferred Prime Minister, bringing her to 35%. Meanwhile, Mr Luxon jumped up 13 percentage points to 17%. Christopher Luxon says the poll is a good start.
Well, look, I mean, the key thing is the gap has narrowed, and, you know, it basically says to me that it's game on. It's really a question of, over the next year, can we demonstrate to the New Zealand people that we've got the ideas and the plans to take the country forward? Can we build back confidence and trust with them? And if we do that job well, they'll start to view us as an alternative government in waiting. And then in 2023, we'll be in great position.
But National's gain has been axe loss. The party lost 3 percentage points and is now on 11%. Ex-David Seymour says there is always a honeymoon period when a party gets a new leader.
Obviously, things will bounce around in the meantime, but overall, the ACT Party is about 1.5 times as popular as it was on election night. It's not a bad year's work.
Both leaders felt Omicron and inflation have taken the shine off the government. However, Jacinda Ardern said yesterday's poll was still a good result for Labour. We will be speaking to our political editor, Jane Patterson. Well, a number of teenagers who attended the Sound Splash Festival near Hamilton at the weekend say half their friends have now COVID-19. Some say they have been told they have Omicron, and there are fears the event could be the first super spreader of the new COVID variant. Many are school students who are at or planning to head back to school very soon. The Hamilton event is now connected to at least 5 cases of COVID-19, including one of Omicron. At least 68 close contacts have been identified, and all festival goers have been told to monitor for symptoms and isolate if they are called to. President of Auckland's Secondary Principals Association, Stephen Hargraves, is principal at McLean's College in Bucklands Beach. He's with us now. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Corin.
How's your school faring?
We're probably in a nice spot because while we had students in school earlier this week sorting out courses and so forth, Thursday, Friday are teacher-only days for us, so our students are all off anyway.
And what's been your policy here? So are you telling the students if they've been at the festival just to stay home?
Yeah, well, they're staying home anyway, and like the Ministry of Health said, they need to observe themselves for symptoms, but I can fully understand why other schools have taken the move of sending students home. You've got to play it safe. You want the year to kick off with students making other students ill at school and ruining the start of the year.
Are you telling them, I think it was, there was one other school in Auckland, I think it was Mount Albert Grammar perhaps, I can't remember exactly which one, which had said, get a test before you can come back?
Yeah, I can understand that. They've got to play it safe. I mean, I think the parents of the community would expect that. I mean, we're bringing in these big schools up to 3,000 students on site at once. And while we've got good mitigations in place, you know, we're highly vaccinated, we're wearing masks, we're distancing where possible, we're reducing the big gatherings, not having assemblies, there's still risk there. And I think it's sensible and prudent to advise those students to make sure that they are good to return.
I mean, the issue seems to be that this may well be far wider than we're initially finding out. Obviously, there's only been 5 cases confirmed, but already we're hearing anecdotally that it's going to be much wider than that. And the other issue is that so many of these cases could well end up being asymptomatic, given that they're, you know, young, healthy teenagers.
Yeah, that's the problem. And, of course, it's that time delay. So while the festival took place, you know, a week ago, you know, if it's been passed on to somebody and then they take a little while before they start displaying symptoms, they've been in contact with a lot of people. And again, that just goes back to why you've got to play it safe.
Play it safe, but this is the reality we've been warned of. And we, in some ways, this is just something we were always going to have to confront, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, we'll be dealing with it for 2 years. And this is the environment we've been in. But I think the mindset for most school leaders that I've been in touch with is we want things to happen this year. You know, we're going to make events happen. We want to be teaching face-to-face. It's best for students to be in school. So where at all possible, we want to have the students on campus and have life you know, return so that they can have a proper experience and a full experience of school. But that does mean when students have been in close contact with somebody, they need to stay home so that the rest of the campus can get on.
Stephen Hargraves, thank you very much for that. President of Auckland Secondary Principals Association, also principal at Maclean's College in Bucklands Beach.
The government will this morning announce the route and cost of Auckland's long-awaited light rail project. Three options were presented to Cabinet last year, each of which run from the city centre to the airport at a cost of between $9 and $16 billion, Jordan Bond reports.
The government made a big choice last year, how they'd spend at least $10 billion and a decade building a light rail line. It's taken many years of back and forth and back again to get to this point. It was one of the first campaign promises the then opposition leader, Jacinda Ardern, made in 2017. But to date, not a spade's hit the ground.
We can't keep going on with discussing and throwing options out there. It's 7 years now since light rail was first proposed and saying that we urgently needed it, and so we need to get on with it.
That's Matt Lowry, a transport and urban development commentator. Of the three options put forward by a working group, one is completely above ground along Dominion Road. Another option is half under and half overground. And the other option, completely underground. Both of these run under Sandringham Road. Matt Lowry expects the government will go with the half and half option, underground from the central city to Mount Roskill, and then overland to Mangere and the airport. But he hopes he's wrong.
The benefit of the surface option is you have a much cheaper delivery and you can get it delivered faster. The advantage with the metro option is for automated services, so you can have driverless trains and run really high frequency. Tunnelled light rail sort of has the worst parts of both of them.
The National Party's new transport spokesperson, Simeon Brown, says if he was the one committing to a big ticket item, it wouldn't be light rail.
I think the number one priority for Auckland has to be a second harbour crossing. I think that's critical to unlocking Auckland's potential.
He says the government is overly focused on the ideologically driven pet project of light rail, or what he calls a slow tram. Simeon Brown would push ahead with the Mill Road and East-West Link roading projects, which he says are going nowhere. But he's not all roads.
The key focus in terms of public transport is completing the eastern busway from Botany to the airport. There's the northwestern busway as well. And then it's looking at how to maximise use of the current existing railway network.
He says the benefits just do not stack up for light rail. Even the working group's report gave the three options a benefit cost ratio of $1.1 to $1.2 for every dollar spent. There's likely to be more announced today than only light rail. Road safety campaigner Caroline Perry says more needs to be done to lower the road toll.
That includes our roads and things like median barriers and roadside barriers that we know help to reduce crashes and reduce the severity of injuries, and also more investment in things like driver education and training.
She says that work is sorely needed after a Christmas New Year period when 17 people died on the roads in less than 2 weeks.
An Australian-based epidemiologist says New Zealand can't avoid an Omicron outbreak and there's no need to panic about it. Soundsplash, a music event in Hamilton last weekend, is being regarded as a possible super spreader event after one case of Omicron was confirmed yesterday and others are expected. Melbourne-based epidemiologist Tony Blakely says Omicron will arrive, but it won't be too bad if it's managed well. He joins us now. Good morning, Tony.
Morena.
Yes, I mean, you can imagine there is a lot of worry and concern as we prepare for this wave. You're saying to not panic and that these super spreader events, they're not the end of the world.
Exactly. The super spreader event, that's what it is, and it sounds like it probably is Omicron. It's going to take hold. It's not okay, but that's all right. If it had been Delta, it would be a totally another different story because you would really want to squash Delta down so that you've got a pure Omicron experience. So I'm not too concerned about it. New Zealand's in a situation where they have to decide how much they want to sort of keep squashing things down for a little while and stamping things out, I think is the jargon you use, versus getting on with it. To stamp it out, you would do that if you're trying to get more people boosted and you're trying to buy time to get more rat tests in. On the boosting side, you need to remember that every extra person that gets boosted, that's good, But you've also got all those people who've already been boosted, and each week that goes by, they've got slightly more waning immunity. So I'd be, relaxed is the wrong word, I'd be fairly sort of comfortable about the fact that Omicron's starting to grow in numbers and worrying more about what you're going to be doing in a couple of weeks' time to make sure you take the top off the epidemic. You don't want the numbers getting too high in 2 to 6 weeks' time.
But you're of the view, aren't you, that a large chunk of the population will get this virus. I think that the issue in New Zealand at the moment is we haven't got our heads around the idea of the mildness or the severeness or what it will mean in terms of people having to isolate and the disruption. It's still so much uncertainty for us.
Yeah, there should be less uncertainty for New Zealand because you can learn from all the other countries that have been through it. So approximately half of the New Zealand population will get it, which is 2.5 million, which means that numbers that are being bandied about at the moment of 50 to 80,000 peak per day infections are about right. But remember, that's the infections per day. With Omicron, the majority of infections are asymptomatic. So the number of actual cases that you get notified at the peak might be around 10 to 15,000 cases per day, something like that. And the trick here is to minimise the hospitalisation and the mortality burden. To do that, what you do is you get the people who are elderly, those with comorbidities, those who are immunocompromised, you protect them like crazy. And they hunker down. They withdraw from society. They make sure they're wearing high-quality masks. They still do need to go out. We, as the rest of society, help those people by ensuring that they get their groceries to their house without needing to go out and about. And by protecting the vulnerable, and the flip side of this, a little bit controversial, but it's true, is that the rest of us, the young, fit and healthy, basically are the ones who get infected. We will see this wash through with about half the population infected, and it will take a couple of months to happen, and the mortality and hospitalisation burden shouldn't be too great.
Okay, so if you are young and fit and healthy, or at least you think you are, that's one of the problems, isn't it? You don't, might not know about an underlying condition. But if you are, you should. How should you go about your life in terms of, because it's hard to know how much to cancel flights or going to the gym. What do you do?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I'm not encouraging people to go out to Omicron parties and get infected ASAP. I'm going to make that very, very clear. But, you know, you should go about your life in a reasonably normal manner. Your contribution to society is to ensure that the increase in cases is not too rapid. We don't want the numbers going so high it overwhelms the health services. So all of us should be cautious, doing good practices, physical distancing and all those sorts of things. Because even if we get Omicron, we want to spread it out so that it doesn't put stress on the health services. And again, the key issue here is to ensure that the people who are 60, 65 plus, the people with comorbidities, they are the ones that are hunkered down the most and try and withdraw from society.
So does there need to be a coordinated messaging to those older New Zealanders? There'll be some, many, I suspect, who won't want to do that. They will think they've got their 3 doses of the vaccine, they've got a life to live, they won't want to hunker down.
That's fine, and so much as that I think every individual needs to make their own decision, but as long as those individuals have the information and the resources to do it the best way possible. So, for example, if you are 65 and you think, I'm okay, then at least do things like get a really good mask, a KN95 or an N95 mask, and use that when you go out and about, and do try and protect yourself in your movements around society if you don't want to completely hunker down. And that's fine. Everybody can make their sort of risk assessment on that basis. And if you're triple vaccinated, you'll be safer, but not completely safe. None of us are completely safe.
But do you think the government should be, in terms of its messaging to that group, should be telling them explicitly what the risks are for that group and that they might want to think about retreating?
I think that's a sensible idea. And that's the messaging that we've used over here. It's fairly clear that the hospitalisation rate and the death rate goes up exponentially with age and also goes up a lot if you've got comorbidities. And as long as people have that information, they can make their own decisions about how to look after themselves. The other thing is that the family members or the friends or the neighbours of those people can also do things. So, for example, where I'm living, diagonally across me, there's some more elderly people, and we're all very careful that when we say hello, that we're keeping well away from their front door, we're not going into their house, those sorts of things when Omicron's around.
Tony Blakely, thank you as always. Epidemiologist, Melbourne-based epidemiologist, Professor Tony Blakely.
The Red Cross says Tonga is on the road to recovery, 2 weeks after a volcanic eruption and tsunami devastated the Pacific nation. Staff and volunteers are delivering drinking water, temporary shelters and other critical relief supplies. With us now from Tonga is Secretary General of the Tonga Red Cross, Sione Tomoifilau. Maloalele, how are you?
Maloalele, I'm fine. From Tonga.
Thank you very much for talking to us today. I hope the phone line sticks with us. How are things looking?
I think the recovery at the moment is being contained at the moment. So the what we've been done to those affected area in Tongatapu and also the other island, we receive a lot of assistance coming from New Zealand and also from Australia on maybe ships in some other country. But the issue at the moment that the social support needs to be provided to those affected areas.
What sort of things are people in greatest need of, and are you able to get them to them?
The challenge that what we have now is transportation of relief supplies and food from Tongatapu to the other island. Even though we have the Navy ship, but we still have some challenges of transportation those food to the island. And those communities that affected, like Kanukupolo and Patangata, they still try to recover. And I think they have some mental challenges after the event in their communities.
I'm just going to ask you another question. I am struggling a little bit to hear what you're saying, but it's really important to talk to you. So I'm going to try one more question as well. In terms of COVID protocols and keeping people safe, are your staff or volunteers having to take extra precautions?
Yeah, this is part of our role to make sure that the precaution of the COVID-19 in Tonga. So especially for the ship who arrived here in a couple of days ago, so there's no communication at all. They are unloading the stuff and then they depart from the harbor. But on the Red Cross volunteer, we understand the whole concept, trying to prevent any COVID-19 arriving in Tonga.
Kia ora, thank you very much for talking to us from Tonga there. That was the Secretary General of the Tonga Red Cross, Sione Tomoifilau. A Wellington clinical psychologist is advising New Zealanders to keep calm and be prepared for an Omicron outbreak. The infectious strain of COVID is making many older people who rely on outside help nervous, and they're not the only ones. Others are stocking up, indeed working from home, worrying about what to tell their children. We can talk now, though, with Victoria University clinical psychologist Dougal Sutherland. Kia ora, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Kia ora, good morning. Nice to be with you.
What is the most important thing that people can do?
Well, I think, you know, as you said in your intro, keeping calm is really important, as calm as you can. And we often gloss over that and say, oh, of course we need to keep calm. But actually focusing on keeping centred and calm and grounded so that you can think clearly about a situation and then get prepared. Listen to your anxiety and what are you getting anxious about? Is it your home? Is it your whānau? Is it your work? And then use that to guide you to prepare. And that's a really practical thing because anxiety is trying to get you to do something. But we also know from previous experience in COVID lockdowns that when people engage in health-related behaviours, it actually helps lower their anxiety and their distress.
Okay, so what kind of things can people do to, you know, damp down that feeling that many people will be experiencing at the moment?
So think about the things in your life that you can control. Try not to focus too much on things that are out of your control, like how fastly Omicron's going to rip through New Zealand. You know, we can't control that. But what can you control in your world, in your life? And that might be as simple as, I've got enough masks and am washing my hands. It could be that me and my whānau have stocked up on library books, and we've got a couple of packs of playing cards so that when we get isolated, we've actually got things to do. It could be that you have a conversation with your work, if you haven't had that already, about what are the arrangements about working from home? Can I do it? What's the possibilities? How much sick leave have I got? So those really practical things that are that your anxiety is sort of prompting you to attend to, try and put some really practical things in place that you can control.
What shouldn't you do?
You probably don't want to panic, you know, and you probably don't need any more toilet paper. We've probably all got enough of that right now. But also, as I mentioned earlier, try not to focus too much on the things that are out of your control. Try to bring your focus of control, your thinking into the things that are in your circle of control, rather than things that you can't really control or influence at all. So that gives a sense of controllability over the whole situation.
What about social media, news? It's hard, isn't it? Because you need to kind of keep up with things and you need to be informed, but it's a fine line, or it can be.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I've found myself doom scrolling in the past too, and it just gets worse and worse and worse, and you can get sucked into a bit of a negative spiral. But my suggestion is if you find that yourself doing that, then try and limit yourself to perhaps two or three news catch-ups a day. Listen to the news in the morning, lunchtime maybe, and then in the evening, just to keep up to date. But you probably don't need to be having the radio or the news on 24/7 if that's going to cause you some stress.
How do you talk to children about this?
So firstly, I'd be saying to parents, be careful to inoculate your children against your own anxiety as parents. That often the things that we as adults and parents worry about are not the same things that children are worried about. So rather than telling them or them overhearing your conversations about what you're worried about, take some time to simply sit and listen to what they are thinking about us in the situation. And look, it could be nothing. I talked to my 15-year-old daughter yesterday. I said, are you guys talking about Omicron and worried about it? She said, nah, we don't really think about it until it happens. So I was like, okay. And younger kids might be worried about who's going to feed the rabbit, or, you know, will they still get to watch TV or something like that. So take some time to listen, and then avoid trying to solve the problem for them or trying to just placate them and say it'll be all right, dear. What we want to do is we want to build active copers in our children. So that means helping them to figure out what they can do to alleviate their anxiety and control the situation. Of course, they might need parents' help to do that, but don't do it for them, which may go against your natural instincts as a parent. You may want to, you know, of course, we all want to protect and help and support our kids. But actually, in the long run, we want to build kids who can recognise their anxiety and do something practical and active to cope with it, rather than simply falling back on other people.
Interesting stuff. Thank you very much. It's going to be quite a shift to having COVID in the community in a sort of real way. Thank you very much. Dougal Sutherland, clinical psychologist with Victoria University. Well, now let's go over to Golden Bay. A summer holiday close encounter with an orca is not what a group of children were expecting when they paddled their kayaks out into Liger Bay in Golden Bay. It's left them buzzing, though. Nelson's Stephen Halcrow was standing on the beach watching his two sons and their friends kayaking and paddleboarding close by when they spotted a massive dorsal fin. Here's a clip of the moment.
Chill out. No, chill out. Look, he's right there, chasing stingrays.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, they're going to go between them.
We'll put that full video on our Facebook page so you can take a look at it. It's quite a watch. Stephen is on the line now, I think from a campground in Kaitiriteri, to talk to us about all of this. Kia ora.
Kia ora, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I was in Liger Bay and saw stingrays and had the pleasure of swimming with them, but this is amazing. When did you realise the orca was there?
We were just there on Tuesday, and we were breaking the weather. It was a wet day, and we went down for a bit of a paddleboard and a bit of a kayak, and then all of a sudden the kids were making a bit of noise. It looked like a bit of a scene out of Jaws, actually. And then someone said, oh, there's some fins, and the kids thought it was dolphins. Well, it is the biggest species of dolphin, I suppose. And, we saw a couple of fins, and they were just cruising around. It's a pretty shallow sort of bay, so they were just cruising around from bay to bay, I think, and they were just searching for a bit of food, and like you heard on the video, we were just trying to keep a bit of calm, a little bit of composure, and instead of freaking them out,
What were your first thoughts when you saw those fins?
I wasn't panicked at all. I just wanted to get it, but somebody start filming this, and somebody else said, phone all the others up at the batch to get them down here. So that was our first thoughts, but, just trying to not freak all the kids out.
How did all the kids deal with it?
Well, some of them were, one in particular came in shaking and crying, and the others were buzzing. They had adrenaline running through their veins. They were talking so fast and shouting and pretty excited. It was one of those once in a lifetime experiences, I believe.
I was going to say, has the one who was shaking and crying really understandable? But I bet now they're feeling pretty stoked with it all, are they?
Yeah, he said the next day, he goes, at the moment I was shaking and crying, but he now realises it was a once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah.
He's pretty lucky to have done it.
One of the kids, I have to say, when I watched the video, it was the one on the paddleboard. I was like, whoa, paddleboard. I wonder how good they are at that.
Yeah, that's my son Luke. He's 13. And he said to me, he goes, I had a sudden pain in my chest. And I was thinking, uh-oh, this is what a heart attack's like. But, he paddled pretty fast by the looks of it,
I bet he did. How was it moving and how long did it sort of stay around?
Oh, they were probably in the bay for about 5 minutes, and one of the orca just went across the backs. But this one came straight into shore and then did a sharp turn amongst the children there, like they were following something along the bottom. But, one can only guess what they were up to.
After those stingrays, I guess. Hey, look, thanks so much for telling the story. Stephen Hullcrow there.
Okay, catch you later.
Australians stuck in New Zealand and New Zealanders stuck over the ditch say they still have no idea when they'll be able to return home. Both groups say they're trapped between the two most locked down nations in the world with no way out. Among them are elderly New Zealanders, and the uncertainty is taking a toll. Jill Bonnet reports.
Cancelled flights and managed isolation bookings have left 78-year-old Ken Hill from Hokitika struggling to cope.
Mentally, I'm buggered. I am, honestly, because, you just remember things that you did in New Zealand when you were a kid. And then we can't get back to enjoy it. It's just, I don't know. I just feel the government, they should have, when they had this lobby and that, they should have let a few of us oldies get back in on that thing.
He and his wife Jackie went to see their grandchildren in Melbourne and then took a holiday in Queensland.
We were supposed to be here till the 28th of August, but that got cancelled. Then the 30th got cancelled. Then the 29th of September got cancelled. And then the 17th of January got cancelled.
Nobody knows exactly how many New Zealanders are stuck in Australia. And there's also an unknown number of Australians stranded in this country. Among them, academic Peter Wellstead, who's moving back to Perth after a decade in New Zealand. She returned to Nelson for a six-week trip in July, but fell seriously ill, and by the time she was out of hospital, the border had closed again and flights had dried up.
It's not actually even about me. I mean, I'm okay, I'm coping. I mean, it's been pretty stressful and quite a lot of tears, but there are people in real hardship, and there are thousands of New Zealanders stranded in Australia and thousands of us stranded here. And I think with a bit of negotiation and forethought, we could have solved the problem quite easily.
The 64-year-old says she believes New Zealand and Western Australia have the toughest rules keeping citizens out of their own countries, and as a result, she's trapped. The Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has confirmed that New Zealanders stuck overseas will learn in a matter of weeks when they can skip managed isolation and isolate at home. The reopening plan will allow fully vaccinated New Zealand citizens and residents in Australia to return first, followed by those based elsewhere in the world. Tourists or migrants were due to get the green light to enter without managed isolation from the end of April, but now the MIQ website simply says that final step will be reviewed in 2022.
You've been listening to Morning Report Top Stories from RadioNZ.co.nz.